From tomorrow, we'll be able to re-enter our favourite cafes and restaurants as New Zealand moves to COVID-19 Alert Level 2. And to celebrate, Sarah Johnson from Ngā Taonga Sound and Vision is bringing us recordings today about the history of our national cafe culture, beginning back in the days of the milk bar and the coffee lounge. Hi, Sarah. Great idea.
Kia ora, Jesse. Yeah, I thought, you know, the poor old hospitality industry has been getting a bit of a hammering, so I thought let's go back and just see how far it's come since the 1950s and how that's reflected in radio recordings. So going back to the 1950s, you know, this was the era when we still had the 6 o'clock swill. Most restaurants couldn't serve alcohol and dining out was pretty limited. You had your fancy hotel dining rooms or it was something quick from the milk bar or the fish and chip shop. So our first cut is from a magazine-style program called Radio Digest, and this episode is from 1956. And they were trying to do a light-hearted sort of look at the changing lunch habits of New Zealanders. And this was the change from the traditional English, I guess, main meal of the day at lunchtime. Mm. And now people were choosing to dine more casually rather than the formal sit-down meals of the past.
For the majority of people who eat out in the middle of the day, the pace is vastly different. It's a mad rush to beat the man with a plate of sandwiches in one hand and two cream cakes in the other, to scramble into the one vacant seat about 9 inches square and order double toasted ham and could I have my coffee now, please? Or if you've another few minutes to spare, or you're gastronomically geared for rapid delivery and speedy consumption, you may dash into an establishment with brightly painted cockerels and fish on the windows and settle for
steak and chips and double eggs.
And in the pews or cubicles in front of and behind you, a high-pressure attack is being launched on brain fritters and onion sauce, schnapper and egg, Saratoga chips and tomato sauce, and crumb pork sausages. Some prefer to get away from such ordinary foods and find it easier to assimilate Italian spaghetti and meatballs, Hungarian goulash or Canadian fish salad, or even mock steak and onions, yogurt dessert, and dandelion coffee. And the meal is sometimes even sacrificed completely for a beauty appointment or something of that kind. Well, what are your luncheon habits?
Do you eat your lunch sitting on the grass with the sky for a roof, watching the city's traffic and the passers-by?
Roast beef, two, please. Fast two, please.
Or do you prefer to be indoors, enjoying a sit-down meal of the steak and egg, sausage and chips variety? Perhaps you're a milkshake fiend, or you haunt the espresso bar. Then again, you may take your lunch in really grand style. Myself, well, I like to bike home down when I get the chance.
There's so much in that one little colour. I mean, we could probably do a whole segment just you and I talking about all the foods mentioned in there and how they have changed. The reference to, did you pick up, there was a reference there to really what is a vegetarian food, but it wasn't named as such. That was from 1956. He was talking there about mock steak and onions, yogurt dessert and dandelion coffee. Hallmark dishes from the Sanitarium Health Food Cafe, which had been in existence, I think, since the really early years of the 20th century. And they were the only place you were going to find vegetarian food in New Zealand right through until you got sort of, you know, the hippie kind of whole food cafes in the late 60s or early 70s. So
that word yogurt wouldn't have been in common use probably back in 1956.
No, well, there was a certain tone in the voice when he said yogurt dessert. So, yeah, definitely very exotic, I think, for most 1950s New Zealand radio listeners. So our next cut, we move forward into the 1960s, and this is from a Spectrum documentary, which is an interview with a pioneer of Wellington's cafe scene, Mary Seddon. Now, she was actually the granddaughter of the former Prime Minister, Richard Seddon. And like him, she was quite a colourful personality, as you'll hear. So she returned from living in Europe in the late 1950s, came back to this pretty grim, buttoned-down hospitality scene in Wellington, And she became involved in opening one of the first coffee bars. And this was in Roxburgh Street, I think it is, at the foot of Mount Victoria. And it was called the Monde Marie. And it was a mainstay of Wellington cafe life right through the 1960s. So this is a Spectrum documentary recorded with her in the early 1990s. And she told producer Jerem Svetanovic that along with the real coffee, the Monde Marie offered Wellingtonians something quite new in terms of a going-out experience.
We had good coffee and cakes that we'd made ourselves.
I imagine it was a popular place, given the absence of anything else like it in the city.
Yes,
I imagine
a gathering point most nights.
The milk bar wasn't even a...
Yes, but who'd want to go there and have a raspberry milkshake? That was for shop girls. It wasn't for impressive businessmen.
Right.
I'm sorry if it sounds snobby, but that's what they'd think. There was just nothing for that kind of person at all. And I'm the sort that won't have hanky... I suppose it's being a schoolteacher. I wasn't going to have hanky-panky. And I wasn't going to have men sort of picking up girls or anything. And it got sort of the name that fathers would say to their daughters, well, you can go to the Mond, but you can't go to this one, that one. And it really was comfortable because you didn't get the feeling, if you talked to somebody, that you were trying to pick them up.
Right.
And a lot of people actually met there. A lot of these people lived at home or with strict landladies or something. And this was one of the few places they could actually meet and talk and feel free, and that they weren't in a really tough environment, which might have caused trouble.
Friday and Saturday evening, there'd be the young man in a suit and the young lady in her black taffeta dress, that kind of thing.
Oh, yes, and they'd be mixing up with people in jeans and sneakers and that. In the corner, there would be a middle-aged lady with a beaded frock. It was a real mix-up, and I wanted it that way. And I would not allow one group to take over. And you had to watch like anything, because if you didn't, one lot would start getting in early and getting all the best seats, and they would assume that they were the great ones. And it's a great mistake. I didn't like it at all.
Wow, that is an amazing cut. It's the voice of cafe owner, pioneering Wellington coffee bar owner Mary Seddon, talking about her cafe, the Monde Marie, in the 1960s. I wonder if it was on the corner of Roxburgh and Marshbanks Street, Sarah. I don't know how well you know Wellington. I used to live off one of those streets, and there is a pretty iconic sort of restaurant site there.
Yes, there's a couple that were just up Roxburgh Street there too. You know, I spent some formative years in Wellington in the 1980s and the early 90s, and I know my parents talk about the Monde Marie as one of the haunts of the young ones in the sort of late 50s, early 1960s. That was when folk music became, that was the thing that, you know, the young ones were into then, and the Monde Marie became quite well known for that. Mary, you couldn't, as she says in the documentary, we've put a link to it up on your webpage today too if people want to listen to the full thing. She couldn't get a liquor licence, and she actually had a lot of trouble with the authorities. There are really archaic licensing laws, and there are only 10 licensed restaurants in the country in 1961, she said. It was so difficult to get a licence to just serve wine. But anyway, she folk music became quite a selling point of the Monde Marie. But as she says in this next cut, she didn't have very fond memories of some of the performers.
Somebody came in and they sang the Sloop John B. Then the next lot came in and they sang the Sloop John B. And it sounded extraordinarily similar to the first lot. And it was only after a while I recognised that they'd got the very first Kingston Trio record. And that was the beginning of folk in New Zealand. They were all singing this sort of thing about poets starving in the gutter and all this. And I'd say to them, well, really, why can't you just sing some nice, easy tunes and get going? And they said, but Mary, I feel it. Oh, gosh. These poor little sopranos. And I described them as mutton-fed virgins from the Taranaki. And they'd come in and try and sing things like the House of the Rising Sun. Well, goodness, a girl with a pretty voice singing a nice Irish easy tune would have been absolutely super, and everyone would have loved it. But no, they had to pretend to be prostitutes and dying as they sang of the House of the Rising Sun. It's stupid. Their voices weren't right. Their characters weren't right. They were young, and this was their first opportunity to sing in public.
So there were some disasters musically.
We dropped the amplifier down a bit out the back and clattered a few cups around and let people talk a bit.
Mary said in remembering the folk music scene in her 1960s Wellington coffee bar, the Mont Marie. A couple of people have mentioned, Sarah, that the Chez Paris was just around the corner on Marjorie Bank Street or Marsh Bank Street, depending on how you pronounce it, another popular haunt at the time.
Yes. There's some great articles if people are interested. If you just Google Wellington Cafe history, Wellington City Library has written a couple of good pieces, just recounting all the early coffee bars from that era. So if we fast forward 20 years to the 1980s, and of course licensing law thankfully changed, we got rid of the 6 o'clock swill, and the 80s were a golden time really for hospitality industry, especially in the cities, especially I think in Auckland and Wellington. You know, we had the share market boom, which meant lots of people with lots of disposable income. You had the the yuppie tradition of the boozy long lunch and the power dinner. And places like the Coachman and Orsini's in Wellington, Antoine's in Auckland, were really, the names that everybody knew. But, of course, when the stock market crashed in 87, a lot of restaurants went down with it. So this last cut is from an Insight documentary from 1992, and it's looking at the changes in the hospitality scene.
Thanks, Sarah.
The closure of the Coachman, along with Wellington's other top-draw restaurants, swept away the maitre d's and the silver service. They were replaced by the brassy, busy bistro. One by one, all the old upmarket restaurants have moved downmarket. The dark wood panels have gone, and Orsini's has now become Cafe Orsini's. Historic Plymer House has undergone a paint job and emerged as the Bulcott Street Bistro. The list goes on. In the cities, the latest trend is the so-called brasserie. But it's a trend restaurateurs like Tony Astle are not impressed with.
There's not one real brasserie, maybe Chin Chin to a certain extent, but there's not really one brasserie in this country. There's no such thing as a brasserie like you'd know a brasserie in France. They're all restaurants calling themselves brasseries, or coffee bars calling themselves brasseries, because brasserie seems to be the name that New Zealanders have got hold of. We're very strange like that. We pick up on something and we are God on the subject. So we now have 450,000 brasseries, all serving exactly the same food, same noise.
So why do we all suddenly want to go casual and talk at the top of our voices? Michael Guy says it's all because of what happened in October 1987.
Well, I think the brasseries tended to be a cop-out for people not having money after the share market crash. They could use that as an excuse to eat cheap and not show that they're cheapskates, whereas when, prior to the crash, people had to go out to the expensive restaurants to spend a lot of money and buy French champagne and flash the gold card to kind of keep up with the play. It was just like that bull market.
So restaurants joined the casualty list along with Equity Corp and the rest.
Wow, that's an Insight documentary from 1992, which featured many famous names from New Zealand's hospitality scene. The late Des Britton, Tony Astle, who's still going strong, as I understand, Michael Guy and Lois Daish. And there are links on our webpage if you want to listen to that and the other Spectrum doco from with Mary Seddon that we featured.